Zach is going to listen to our podcast about this. Very excited to hear this magical boundary that we're going to give him, who's going to keep his girlfriend from finally bringing the boyfriend. What do you think Zach's response will be once he listens?
He's probably going to say, if he's like everybody else we talked to, that's not fair. Why do I have to do all of that and sacrifice?
He's going to use that four-letter word that starts fair. With an F. He's going to use the F word.
Yes. I love it.
F-A-I-R. But yes. It's not fair. And I feel that. I really do.
Oh, yeah.
I hate it. You're exactly right. It is not fair. Hey, this is Diane Dirks.
And I'm Rick Voiles.
We've been working with co-parents in conflict for more than two decades. We've taught classes, written books, counseled parents, empathized, and agonized a few times to help people make sense of their complicated families.
We were talking one day, and it occurred to us that helping the most difficult cases comes down to one simple concept. Is one parent willing to let go of the tug-of-war rope, or is it worth it to hold on and fight?
So we invite you to take this journey with us each episode as we tackle the questions, should you hold on or let it go? Welcome to Co-Parent Dilemmas, where we give you practical solutions to those impossible co-parents. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Diane.
How goes it?
It goes well.
Good. You sound better than you did last week.
Yes. Yes. I think it's on the right track here.
Good. Good. So what's new in your life? Anything?
Do you have Girl Scout cookies in your life?
Through my daughter. Yes.
But yes.
In my house.
Yeah. We have them in the house. Of course, Janet doesn't like that very much, but I like them.
Oh, yeah. They're good. What's your favorite? I love the Thin Mints.
Oh, yes. Thin Mints and Samoas.
Yeah, the gooey Samoas or something about that.
Right.
Yep. All right. Today, I just want to read a couple of emails first before we get into the meat of the topic for today.
Yes.
This is from Tara. She said, "Hi, guys. I absolutely love your podcasts. I have been preparing for my trial hearing coming up a week from today. I have a lawyer, but a busy or lazy or just doesn't care one. It's coming to a point where the ex wants to settle out of court. I went to alcohol treatment 4 years ago, and it's a long story. But that is still held over my head when he wants. It is now time to check out SoberLink because that's his excuse for keeping her away from me off and on at his convenience. Is there a program to help pay for that? I heard you mention it several times, and I'm just trying to put food on the table as well as get more time with my daughter. Thanks for all you guys do. It has helped me so much. I tell everyone about you. I also want to sign up for the Wednesday Hump Day sessions, but I can't get the link to work. Thank you, Tara." So first of all, I want to address the link issue. We did have a typo in the link. Uh-huh. So for all of you who tried to click on the Patreon link so that you could sign up to attend our Wednesday Hump Day Help sessions, please go back and try again. The link should be working now. As far as her question about, is there a program? I don't know. Go to soberlink.com and ask that question. That's where they could probably tell you if there's any types of help that they can give you, because I'm not real sure about that. Go to soberlink.com/CP dilemmas to get your discount if you are going to do it. There's a $50 discount, I think, on the equipment that you use for SoberLink. I would also suggest, if you're going to go to mediation or something like that, because you said he wants to settle out of court, that maybe you talk about how he might help pay for it. Or talk with the mediator or talk with your attorney. And I'm sorry you have an attorney who's too busy or lazy, right, and doesn't care. That's always very disconcerting. But find out if there's a way that your attorney and his attorney could work something out where that cost would be shared, so that in the way to present that to dad is that helps him have peace of mind. Now, we're not sure, based on what you said, whether dad's really looking for peace of mind. He may be looking for, I just want to keep the kids away from you. And having that conversation would sort of flush that out. right? If you're concerned about my alcohol issue, then help me pay for this so that you can have your peace of mind. If he doesn't want to pay for it, it really calls into question whether or not that's his true motive.
And I would suspect it already in that she's the one that's doing it to try to convince him that alcohol is no longer a problem.
Right.
He's not trying to find a solution. That's interesting.
Yeah. He may not want to find out that she doesn't have a problem because then he would lose his leverage. So, so I would talk with your attorney about that and see if they can't work something out, because I think if that was pressed in court, the judge may see through that.
Yes.
So that would be your attorney's strategy in mediation to say, hey, other attorney, if this goes to court, I'm going to press for this. And if he refuses to help pay, it's going to make it look like he's not really concerned about alcohol.
Right.
Okay. So let's get to today's question from Zachary. This is a common issue when your other parent gets involved with another partner or remarries, and the other partner is a problem. We always hope, Rick, that if somebody remarries, they do better than they did the first time and they choose someone who's more level-headed, maybe is going to be a good like mediator or an objective partner around some of these emotional issues. But sometimes we choose partners who stimulate our conflict senses rather than bring us down off the ledge, right?
Yes.
So I've always told people that if, you know, sometimes we're attracted to people who are really into our high conflict situation.
Rescuers.
Yes, because they're very affirming and they want to help you and they want to jump in. I always say, beware.
Yeah,
you have somebody come into your life who's excited about helping you take the other parent down, you probably ought to run.
Yes.
Because they're going to be worse than the person you just left.
They love to fight.
Right. They love conflict. So just beware of that. Rick, do you want to read Zachary's email for us?
I will read Zachary's email. Yes. Here we go. Good morning, Diane and Rick. I live out here near Atlanta, Georgia. I am going through a very nasty divorce for nearly a year now. Thank you very much for all the amazing advice from listening to your podcast the last few weeks. I am learning so much and how to work with a narcissistic co-parent. My co-parent had an affair with her friend's husband and moved in his home the day after I found out of the affair. This guy is the worst fire starter you've ever seen. He is the reason for 90% of the conflict between me and my co-parent. They both lied to the police, claiming I committed battery. My guardian ad litem investigated our case and came to the conclusion that they lied and the battery is a false allegation. She brings the guy to half the custody exchange that the guardian ad litem put a stop to, fortunately. My mother-in-law, who still lives with me after all of this and supports me through this divorce, does all custody exchanges because I do not trust my co-parent or her very toxic boyfriend. I'm currently going through the court process fighting the criminal charges. How can I set boundaries with my co-parent to stop bringing the guy she had an affair with to my children's school activities? Thank you both for the podcast. It has helped me guide a path through this horrible time. Zach.
Wow.
There's a lot going on here. Yes.
I'm intrigued that the mother-in-law is still living with him.
Me too. I thought, wow, that is very interesting.
There's a lot of dysfunction because, number one, that's not normal unless mother-in-law just doesn't have a place to live.
Right. She may have some care issues going on that's part of that. I don't know.
But it's always suspicious to me when the mother of one of the parents sides with somebody other than their own child.
Yeah. Yeah. That could mean several things.
Yeah. It can mean a lot of things. And I'm not going to try to guess what it means, you know, but my spidey sense goes up. It's okay. Is this why this child is such a problem? Because she has a mother who's in competition with her instead of being her support. I don't know.
Yep.
That's really not his question. I'm glad somebody else is doing the exchanges, because if he's already been falsely accused, who knows what other accusations might come about.
Exactly.
He doesn't say how old the children are, does he?
No, he doesn't.
So I think I want to address his question about boundaries. What is your first thought about his question? How do I set a boundary to keep her from doing something?
Yeah, that my first thought around that is that that's a misunderstanding about how boundaries work. That's not what boundaries mean or setting boundaries mean, to control another person. I can't say I've set a boundary and you can't cross it. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah. Especially around, like, you could set a boundary and say, you can't come into my house anymore. Mm-hmm. And you lock the door. That doesn't mean they won't approach your home and bang on the door for hours.
Right.
Which you might call the police. But the only boundary you can set is to protect yourself from the intrusion of the other person. Mm-hmm. That's not something you can really do at a school event, because that's not your domain to protect.
Right.
So mom is allowed to come to a school event and presumably allowed to bring with her anybody she wants to the school event. She could bring a relative, a friend, or whoever. And that's not anything you can control, Zach.
Correct.
Right. So I think the question really is, how do I protect myself from getting into another criminal case? And actually, we're going to talk about this today. Actually, we're recording on the day I'm doing another hump day.
Yes.
Although this, by the time this airs, we'll be done with it. But we're talking today in our hump day help session about false allegations. And so if that's something you're dealing with, I hope you'll come to the next one, which will be the second Wednesday of April. So the boundary around false allegations is really difficult. But something where I think you have to be proactive and practical in that sense. So let's play this out. Zach shows up at an activity. Let's say it's a basketball game and my daughter's a cheerleader and I want to go and support her. So I show up at the basketball game. Where do I sit, Rick?
I would sit in the top, over on the far edge, so nobody could sit on the other side of me.
But do you walk in and see if she's there first?
Oh, yeah. If she's in that corner, I'm going to go to the other one. Yep.
And so, you know, first of all, be strategic. Don't sit right in front of them, right beside them, right behind them. I don't think he would do that. But they may do that, right? He may arrive first and sit down, and then maybe they come and they sit right behind him to stare bullets through the back of his head.
Oh, that exactly. At that point in time, I'm going to need a bathroom break.
Exactly. So you're going to get up and walk away. It may be, Zach, that you decide to stand near the doorway, near the entrance, so that if you are approached, you just start to walk out. I think that the only boundary you can set is for your personal space.
Correct.
Not for the auditorium or the gymnasium where the event is taking place.
Now, let me add to that, because they're walking toward me and we have to talk about, yes, you know, this, that, or the other thing. Well, if you have an email protocol, which we highly suggest in place, then no, you don't have to talk to each other at all during that.
Yeah. If she walks up to him and says, "Where's my child support check?" You can say, "I'll address that in our Sunday night email."
Right.
Thank you.
Yes.
So he's not really saying what they're attempting to do with these activities, but he did say that this guy is 90% responsible for the conflict between them. That seems pretty high. She's allowing it, so she's more responsible than he's given her credit for.
Yes.
I mean, if this guy wasn't there, you can't tell me she still wouldn't stimulate conflict, because she's allowing this fire to happen. So she's obviously okay with it.
She's probably encouraging it too. And some of the poor victim, you know, go protect me and save me, honey. But this also then leads me to believe he may be thinking of boundary and using the word boundary, thinking he's creating a way to protect the children from being exposed to the affair partner.
Right. He's got to get past the affair thing. Mm-hmm. Water under the bridge, right? You can't undo that. You can't unknow it. So it is what it is. So I think with regard to protecting the kids, this requires a conversation with the children. Yes. And again, I don't know how old they are. Mm-hmm. It's a school activity. We're assuming they're in at least elementary school.
Yeah.
Could be older. But to say, hey, I'm going to go to your basketball game this Saturday, but just so you know, I want you to enjoy the game. I want you to perform as you've practiced so hard to perform. And I don't want that interrupted or distracted by any possible conflict between your mom and I. So I want you to know I'm always going to be the person who will walk away if I have to.
Yes. Yep.
I will commit to you that I will always be the bigger person. So if she tries to come up to me or her boyfriend tries to engage me or something happens, I don't want you to ever worry about embarrassment or worry about what might happen because I might walk away. That also means I might miss some of your performance.
Right. Yes.
Or I may decide not to go on a certain date. So I just want you to know it's not because I don't care.
Yes.
So this might be one of those situations where you get a friend or another parent to record something that you're missing. Let's say you're at the baseball game and your son is about to pitch the final inning and you don't want to miss it. That's where you say to another parent, hey, I need to get out of here because something's happening, or you get approached by the other parent or her boyfriend and you make accommodations to do that. Then you later share it with your child and let them know it's important enough for me to not want to miss it. So Zach is going to listen to our podcast about this. Very excited to hear this magical boundary that we're going to give him, who's going to keep his girlfriend from finally bringing the boyfriend. What do you think Zach's response will be once he listens?
He's probably going to say, if he's like everybody else we talk to, that's not fair. Why do I have to do all of that and sacrifice?
He's going to use that four-letter word that starts fair with an F. He's going to use the F word.
Yes. I love it.
F-A-I-R. But yes. It's not fair. And I feel that. I really do.
Oh, yeah.
I hate it. You're exactly right. It is not fair. However, fairness in your mind is not the same as fairness in your child's mind.
Yes.
What's fair to you may also not be fair to your child. Your child deserves to have you to be there at their activities and be able to witness their important moments and all of that. That is what should be. There's a lot of shoulds in these cases. Shouldn't I be allowed to be a dad? And shouldn't I be allowed to be a mom? Of course you should, but shoulds are not always reality. Mm-mm. Hey, listeners, we've got some exciting news. Starting March 6th, I'll be hosting Hump Day Help every Wednesday at noon Eastern Standard Time via Zoom. Each Wednesday will be focused on a specific topic. The first Wednesdays of the month will focus on parental alienation. The second Wednesdays will focus on parents dealing with false allegations. The third Wednesdays will be about surviving a narcissistic co-parent. And fourth Wednesdays, confronting post-separation control and abuse. You can come to one or all. The only requirement is that you become a Patreon non-impossible VIP. The cost is only $10 a month, but I guarantee you'll get your money's worth out of these support groups. We'll run them through the end of May, and if attendance is constant, we'll continue through the summer. So get started today with Patreon. The link is in the show notes. So what I want to say about fairness is that fairness is a concept. It's a construct. It's a perception that you can get stuck on. And there are many, many depressed people out there whose depression is rooted in lack of fairness. It wasn't fair that I got passed over for that job. It wasn't fair that my mother died when I was 14. It wasn't fair that I got cancer. I mean, you know, there's a lot of depression and anxiety around that word, that very important word. So I would encourage Zach to not go to the, well, that's not fair, and I'm going to fight for this because it's not fair. Well,
right.
Go ahead. And you may spend thousands and thousands of dollars in court to have the judge put in writing, you will not bring John Smith to the activities. But then maybe she breaks up with John Smith and Joe Jones takes his place. Then what are you going to do? So even when it's in a court order, doesn't mean the parent is going to change or get the message. Mm-hmm. So it's not about writing that wrong. It's about you changing your perception about, yeah, this isn't fair, but divorce wasn't fair to my kids either.
Right.
So I'm going to do my absolute best to make this as okay for my children as I possibly can. And let me tell you that that is the long game, hard work.
Right.
That you will do over time. That when your child is sitting in my office at age 25, because he or she needs to process the parents' divorce because they're finally ready, which often happens, by the way, they're going to say to me, my mom was a problem, but my dad handled it like a champ.
Yeah.
My mom did everything in her power to try to keep my dad out of my life. But my dad just did what he could do. Do not think they won't notice that.
Yep.
They might not notice it right now. They might be sad about the fact that you're having to leave their activity. They might even be mad about it because they don't understand why you can't control mom or why you can't fix this. But in the long run, when they reach an age of maturity, they will see you as the hero.
Yeah.
Not because you fought in court. And don't get me wrong, some people do need to fight things in court and be that hero. I'm not saying fighting in court is wrong. But on an issue like this, maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
So when I hear that in my parent coordinating sessions, that's not fair. And sometimes I'll try to head it off because I know it's coming. I will tell them that's called parenting, that you are going to make a lot of sacrifices. And that's what it means to be a parent for your child. And most of those sacrifices will go unrecognized by your child as a sacrifice. That's called parenting. Right. So you're just not volunteering for this sacrifice.
Yes.
That's all.
And you know, I hate to do this, but I'm going to do it again. You can go all the way back to where you chose this person.
Yes.
You crawled into bed and had a child, and then you went, oh my God, why is she doing this to me? Well, you know, so I always encourage people to be a little bit more careful about how you're choosing, who you're choosing to make babies with, because this is a consequence that, yeah, it's not fair and she's being an awful person. But you have to take some accountability for the fact that you made a child with this person, and your child can't help that. Your child didn't ask to be produced by you and this toxic person.
No.
And you may say, oh, she wasn't toxic at all until after the divorce, but I don't buy that because you divorced her for a reason, or she left you for, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So that's not a criticism, Zach. That's just reality.
Yep.
That at some point we all have to take responsibility for what we chose to do and then not lament it and be upset and depressed and angry over it, because that doesn't help your child who didn't ask for any of this. Mm-hmm. What helps your child is, I'm going to deal with my problem the best way I know how so it doesn't infiltrate your life.
Yes.
And you can only do half of that, because she's going to be who she is to your child. I'm not even sure your child is experiencing her the way you are. So don't muddy the waters with your conflict with her.
That's a hard reality that what you said about your choices in the very start. And maybe it's oftentimes you need a therapist to tell you that harsh reality.
Right. To help you work through maybe even some traumatic experiences you've had as a result of this, because there's a lot of little traumas that can add up to a big feeling of trauma. Right. Yep. So this leads me to another email that we got from Hannah. And I think these are connected in some way. She said she was listening to our episode 26, and she said, Rick mentions too much detail in a plan causing conflict and wanting to see the proof. I feel that my parenting plan is just such an example. It is 22 pages of details, yet my ex-husband and I have been fighting over the interpretation of many of those details for about 10 years. I would almost say that too much detail can be a setup for failure because it makes parents feel that they have to be perfect. And in a high conflict case such as ours, it provides ammo for the other parent to point out the times when something is broken, no matter how small. I've gotten to the point where I no longer worry about the small details of the paperwork. But for parents like my ex-husband, who seem to live in the past and like to point out everything that I've said and done over the last 11 years, it's simply a way for the conflict to continue. I just felt like sharing my thoughts and want you to know that I listen to your show every time I'm driving to pick up my daughter from her dad. I'm happy to share more if you're curious, and thanks for all that you do. Thank you, Hannah, for sharing that. And it led me to feel like we needed to reiterate that it's not too much detail or not enough detail, Rick. It's the right kind of detail.
Yeah, I could see 22 pages of a poorly written document by professional mediator. I mean, attorneys.
Yes. Let's go back to Zach's situation. If Zach created a whole new parenting plan and he said, John Smith is not allowed to attend activities with mom. Well, that's pretty detailed. Naming names. But like I said, all she has to do is switch boyfriends.
Right.
So the right kind of detail, and not saying anything at all for Zach, means there's not enough.
Yes.
The right kind of detail is mom and whoever she brings to an activity should not approach dad for any reason.
Yes.
That keeps them apart from each other at an activity, or they need to sit in separate places and not approach one another would probably be better. So use detail that actually addresses the problem, because if you say name names, that's it, you know, they'll just switch people.
Right. It's not enough. Right. Yeah.
And even then, I'm not even sure that detail matters as much as you setting a boundary.
For your own protection. And and then that conversation we talked about to protect the children, what I'm going to do to protect myself and keep you out of the middle. I wrote a protocol for a child, elementary school child's graduation, where both families wanted to come. And this was a high conflict couple. And so thinking about the space, thinking about who brought the child and the child who's taking the child home, and the space in the room itself, how do you write a protocol that thinks about any interaction between the different family members, not just the two parents, and the child being able to interact with both family members, both households, in order to enjoy the event and not put in an awful lot of detail.
Right. So the protocol does what for the parents?
It identifies exactly who's going to be where you can't go, like you can't cross the middle line. And the only people who can cross would be XYZ. And the child can be anywhere in the room, but under someone's supervision, as far as eye contact is concerned, where that child is, to ensure that neither family create or have a chance to have a conflict. Okay. And everybody knows exactly where they're supposed to be, when they're supposed to be there. And that kind of detail lowers the possibility and actuality of conflict.
For the particular co-parents you were working with.
Yes, for the particular, right. In that one event, yes.
Right. So this is where I think your parenting plan needs to be highly customized, which is why, for instance, there are not templates out there that work for everybody. Everybody's always saying, give me the perfect parenting plan. Well, there isn't one.
Nope.
Because that kind of detail probably isn't necessary and won't work for other types of co-parents. But it sounded like you had two toxic co-parents.
And family members, because it was going to be very easy for one family member to walk across and spark a conflict. I could tell the two parents not to interact.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So if Hannah and her co-parent had been fighting for 10 years over interpreting the detail of the parenting plan, it tells me that the detail is not written appropriately.
To their situations.
No. To their situation. Or it's written vaguely.
Mm-hmm.
Because 5 o'clock is 5 o'clock. What is the misinterpretation of 5 o'clock, right?
Yes.
But Father's Day could be too vague. Because what is vague. Father's Day,
right? Yes, yes.
So, you know, there's a lot you can leave out that can cause misinterpretation.
Exactly.
So that's where you have to sort of, if you're going to write detail, if you think it's necessary to put in the detail, make sure it's complete and doesn't leave these open holes for interpretation.
Interpretation. So I always try to, my principle is when I write a protocol or I'm writing a parenting plan, I'm reading it from the perspective, how can I screw this other person over the way this is written? Mm-hmm. And then I find the way I could, and then I fix it so that I can't.
So I'm wondering, this just came to my mind. Uh-oh. I'm wondering if there is I'm thinking of a positive and negative of a photo. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Because oftentimes what some toxic people will do is it said, you are to come and pick up the child at 5.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't say what will happen if you're late.
Correct.
So they take a negative interpretation, the opposite, and say, if you're late, I don't have to give you the child.
Right.
Now, that's a very extreme interpretation.
Oh,
but we've seen people. That's why that drives off in a detail that says, well, you then have 30 minutes. And if you're more than 30 minutes late, then you forfeit your time with the child, which I think is a horrible idea for the child.
Exactly.
Can you imagine being a child and you're sitting at McDonald's waiting on mom to show up and, it's 5:31, get in the car. You don't get to see your mom this weekend. Can you imagine how horrible that is for the kid? But I've seen those clauses put in the plan, they're usually put in there because somebody has said, well, that must mean if you don't do this, then you don't get this. So I'm wondering if there's a way to put in a clause that allows for, I don't know, something that you can say that says, there's no other interpretation here but what's written in black and white. There's, you know, like no reading between the lines is allowed.
Interesting.
Is there a sentence or a paragraph you could write that
thinking
said,
deviously is yes. outside the bounds? Yes. Okay.
That you are not to assume anything other than what is written in this plan.
I have done that. I have written something that does not mean that as a way to eliminate the possible conclusion that I could do that.
Yes.
I'll add that is to say, and then I'll interpret it more.
Give a more concrete example, which I think is good. But I think something tells me that Hannah's co-parent, if it's been 10 years, he's just one of these people who's determined to find a problem with 5 o'clock.
Yes. Right.
So I'm going to find, how do I prove the negative instead of looking at in what's actually written in black and white? How do I prove what's not written is right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because I have experienced that with some people. So, you know, again, it has to be customized. Who are you dealing with? What kind of person are you dealing with? And Rick, I think the hardest thing is to convince your attorney of that. Unfortunately, attorneys come into it with, well, this is how I always write plans. Well,
yes,
but you don't understand my co-parent.
Exactly.
And that's where you might want to speak with someone who is an expert in writing parenting plans.
Hire somebody to review it. Yeah. Right.
And look for all the loopholes, the possible loopholes. And that's really what parenting coordinators can do. Some parenting coordinators help in writing parenting plans. We don't in our organization. We don't usually get involved after the case is settled. But even a good mediator.
Right.
A good mediator gets enough information about your history can help you write a parenting plan. And Rick, I know you've done some of that coaching work, haven't you?
Yes. Yeah. I do that on a lot on the side where I review parenting plans before they're finalized, just to give someone a clue. All right, this is going to cause problems or this contradicts this. And
So,
Here's the other thing. I think it is very difficult for our listeners and especially some of the attorneys to wrap their brains around the things we actually have seen people do.
That kind of deviousness.
Yes.
Yes.
It's you've got to be kidding me. No, we're not.
We could write a book about what people try to do to get around the system or to circumvent, you know, their parents' happiness or their parents' ability to see their children. And it really is quite remarkable when you experience it. And, you know, attorneys are involved in the beginning, but oftentimes not after the fact, or when they are, it's in the context of a modification where they're working on, you know, yet another case, but often don't see how it happens in real time, what they've written in a parenting plan, how that plays out in real time, which that's something we have experienced. And that's why we talk about this the way that we do, because we don't want the parenting plan, which you spent many, many thousands of dollars constructing, to be the point of conflict for you.
Right.
It's supposed to be the thing that keeps you out of conflict, right?
Exactly. The purpose of a parenting plan, the only reason it exists, is to protect you and the child.
Yeah.
So,
in 22 pages of detail that's not appropriate for your particular co-parenting relationship is probably getting you into a big mess.
I would say so, yeah. I'm sorry you have to go through that, but this is a good case. This is a good reason to find or hire a parent coordinator. If both parents could agree, it could stop the conflict.
Or a co-parenting coach, which, you know, we've advertised that our organization is beginning to do. So, you know, just to help you with some of those issues. Hannah, I would like for you to give us more detail about your detail.
Yes.
Give us a couple of paragraphs that, you know, because we're generalizing, because you didn't give me any detail. We're generalizing and assuming that the detail just wasn't the right kind of detail. I would like to see a couple of paragraphs in your parenting plan that he has tried to use against you or tried to misinterpret. And we can then say, well, it might have been better if it said this instead.
Right.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, thank you, Zach and Hannah and Tara, for writing in. We appreciate your emails. So please email us at dilemma@cpdilemmas.com with your questions and comments.
All right.
All right. Good to talk with everyone. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know, before the COVID lockdown, I never thought that I would do online therapy with my clients. But I actually found it to be very satisfying for both of us. BetterHelp is customized online therapy just like that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. So join the millions of people who are seeing what online therapy is really about. It's always a good time to invest in yourself, because you are your greatest asset. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. And Co-Parent Dilemma listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/dilemma. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/dilemma, DILEMMA. The information contained in this podcast is generic. It must not be misconstrued as constituting legal or psychological advice. Decisions relevant to any specific individual, family system, or case require the direct evaluation of skilled, child-centered professionals.